Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and today, as I've been telling you, we're going to be discussing a subject that most of the time people don't want to talk about. Why? Because it's not pleasant to talk about. It's something that is, well, if I were to use my own word, rather ugly to know that anyone has gone through certain experiences. My guest today is Lois Einhorn, and her book is titled Forgiveness and Child Abuse. Would you forgive? It's a pretty powerful question. Lois, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Lois, you have been involved as a professor of communication at the State University of New York's University Center at Binghamton for 27 years plus.
I'm in my 29th year.
Oh, my goodness.
I want to say I started when I was five.
Yes, that's a good way, good age to begin. What I'm fascinated with is that you have written a number of books, lots of articles. You've gotten all kinds of honors and grants. In fact, you've been given 5 major teaching awards. And you were the youngest at the time you received your first one to ever have received such an award. But you wrote this book, Forgiveness and Child Abuse, and in 2004, you were recognized as the heroine of forgiveness, reconciliation, and peace by the World Forgiveness Alliance. And this is an award that was previously given to Mahatma Gandhi, Martin Luther King Jr., Nelson Mandela, and Desmond Tutu.
Very humbling.
Yes, it is, but I would have to say, to write your story, when I read it, I've heard of a lot of horrific things in my life, but your story really was, I don't even know that I have the words to express it. I think what I would say is, it has always been beyond me why anyone brutalizes anything in life. It just doesn't make sense in my head at all.
Doesn't make sense to me either.
So, when I started reading your book, I had certain, because of the title, I had certain concepts. You know how we prejudge or we will pre-assume different things?
Yes.
And a lot of it went right out the window. And I thought, you know, you've taken a turn with this subject matter, putting yourself up there in broad daylight, as one would say, and giving the graphics of what you went through, and then you did something that was so unusual. You went to other people asking them if they had gone through what you'd gone through, would they forgive? What motivated you to do this? Was this part of your healing process? And before you answer that, would you share with my audience what you would like to share?
Sure.
About your own personal experience, because this has been a powerful, powerful journey for you.
I suffered severe abuse at the hands of both of my parents. It was sadistic and severe. And in my search for understanding why this happened, I reached out to notable luminaries, authors, and celebrities. And I was very fortunate that several well-known people responded, including Arun Gandhi, Mary Elizabeth King, Hurricane Carter, Ed Asner, Pete Seeger, Kurt Waldheim, Patch Adams, the list goes on and on. And I asked them the question that I asked the reader of the book, which is, what would you do? You're a child in a family that sadistically abuses. You were forced to torture and destroy. What would you do now as an adult? Do you forgive your parents? How do you forgive yourself? When I sent that out, forgiveness to me was an F word. It wasn't until reading the responses and writing an afterword to the book that forgiveness went from being an F word to a reality.
It was so intriguing the way each individual responded to you. Some had words to say. Others said, I honestly don't know what to say to you. And I thought, this is such honesty, both on your part about what you went through. You're asking the question, would you forgive? And then the integrity of the answers that came back to you. Arun Gandhi, I'm familiar with. I interviewed him a few years ago when he came out about with the book about his grandmother, The Forgotten Woman. And he is a man of such deep, deep compassion and someone that fights for peace every day of his life in his own way. I should say instead of fights, he works towards peace because it's not fighting in the typical way of fighting, so I need to choose my words selectively. But this is a man who has such a compassion for life. He and his, you know, he and his wife both. It was very special. They said, Grandfather Gandhi would say, violence is like the ocean. It is vast, it is deep, it is mysterious, and it possesses the deadly power to decimate humanity. Your story and what you went through by both of your parents reads like something out of a horror film. And it's like, who would even put something like this in a script? I mean, it would be awful. They obviously had some major problems. Yet here you are as a woman. You've come through so much. You've accomplished so much. And yet, until you did this book, you really did not complete the healing. Do you think that maybe that's the reason why the book had to be written?
Correct. It feels like a mission. And I feel like I'm on a mission now as an advocate of forgiveness to show that even the most extreme circumstances can be forgiven if one is open to it. And if one works through, there's a process. It doesn't come easily. And in the afterword, I talk about what helped me to forgive both my parents and myself. It was harder to forgive myself in many ways than my parents. I was forced to torture my sister and her me, and forced to torture and kill animals. And just being responsible for that, it was harder to forgive myself than to forgive my parents.
Now, some of the people that you contacted said, well, you have no reason to feel guilt. You were a child, which is true. You were a child that was under the dominion of adults. And, you know, you think of various situations, for example, like concentration camps, the Japanese concentration camps, the German concentration camps. You know, there's so many different things we can point to that people have done in inhumane things to other people, where they were forced to do things as adults, not necessarily as children, but as adults. In order to survive, they did it. And so you've had a journey, and who knows who's listening to this show right now who has not had to do some things that were dictated to them, whether they were in the military or they were in a personal situation, whatever it might have been, where they felt like they honestly at that moment did not have a choice other than what was done. And they carry all of this horrific, horrific guilt around them. This is what your book is about. Is how you are showing through the words of others, but also the journey you've experienced. What was the greatest thing when you did this book that when you were receiving the material that you said, I now have clarity with this and I don't need to carry this around anymore? When did that happen?
That happened as I was writing the afterword for the book. The afterword took a life of its own and kept changing. I started off not forgiving my parents, with forgiveness being an F word, and I was surprised that it became a reality. It was really a byproduct of healing as opposed to a goal in and of itself. It was not a goal at all, but a byproduct of healing. And I think September 11th helped me also. I spoke at my national convention 6 weeks after 9/11. And talked about how all people are connected at the deepest level. And I was faced with, well, how am I connected with my parents? And that's when I was able to realize that my parents were born pure. they were not born to be sadistic abusers. The same way that Hitler was not born with concentration camp ideas in mind, terrorists are not born holding guns. That really helped me sort of put perspective to things, and to connect with my parents in that way that they were not born to hurt.
One of the people, one of the many people that you contacted was Patch, Dr. Patch Adams. He's such an incredible man. He went against so many of the traditional archetypes in medicine to demonstrate compassion and caring.
I actually met him a couple of weeks ago.
He came to Binghamton.
He came to Binghamton and spoke. So it was really nice to meet him in person.
Yes, because not only is he a physician, but he proudly wears the title of being a professional clown, a citizen diplomat. He's an author and a social activist. And this is a man that has such an empathy, a compassion for people, that when he got your request, his very first sentence is, "You ask important and complicated questions. I spend much of my life, I'm primarily a political activist, in the issues of forgiveness and in how to make a world that would not produce people like your parents. I ached when I read your story." He really was very thoughtful about his response to you.
Everybody's response is very thoughtful. I was amazed at the level of thought.
Mm-hmm.
And what I love about the responses is that you cannot agree with all of them. They're inherently contradictory. I'm told to forgive and I'm told not to forgive. And it opens up dialogue about forgiveness, which is what I hope the book will do, is to open up dialogue about forgiveness, what it means, whether it should be done, and so forth. So the subtitle of my book, "Would You Forgive?" is a question that is posed to the reader and is on my website. I have an ongoing discussion on the question of that I raise in the book about being a child in a family that sadistically abuses and being forced to torture and destroy.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
Would you forgive your parents? And we have an ongoing website discussion dialogue about that.
I found with Patch Adams his observations as a physician, as an activist in his own way, were so profound because he does not feel we live in a climate of forgiveness. He doesn't see any model of leaders at this time, which I think is just amazing because he also says loving is a choice. If you choose a life of intention, we can make a society that does not engage in violence. I can make myself not be violent. This is a man that really sat down and gave, like you said, others that did the same thing. But I found his words were so much to the point because he really, really feels like there is not a future unless you do forgive. You have to let it go. And he made a comment about most of the patients that he's treated in his 35-plus years of medicine haven't had loving skills. They just didn't have it. If they did, they didn't know how to express them. So your request, your question to him, was quite a profound question because he's coming from a positioning of observation of his world that he has, with intention, made a much different one than many physicians would choose to do.
His comments I agree with wholeheartedly, and they were similar to the comments of Bernie Siegel, and both of them were the comments that the responses that had the most impact on me.
Mm-hmm.
I teach now courses on compassionate communication. I spend a lot of time teaching self-empathy, how to treat oneself with empathy. And I agree with the golden rule, but I also teach the golden rule in reverse, which is to treat yourself with the same kindness and tenderness with which you treat others.
Mm-hmm.
And on college campuses, there's a lot of anorexia and bulimia. There's a lot of self-mutilation. Obviously, that's a lot of negative self-talk going on and dislike of the self. And so trying to teach students how to be compassionate toward themselves I say as part of my mission.
I think you've taken on quite a substantial mission. How long did it take you to put your book together and to get all of the materials back from all of these individuals?
I have no clue. I would guess about 6 years, maybe.
That's a lot of time. You know, I have to say that, Lois, with what you've gone through and with the accomplishments you've had in life, have you felt like you were a divided person, as if you actually had multiple personalities, one to deal with the outside world, one to deal with the world of the people that you love, and then another part of you to deal with the shadow side that plagued you, and there was anger and confusion?
No, I'm not sure why I don't have multiple personality, but I don't. It seems like it would make more sense if I did. But fortunately, I've always felt complete and whole and not divided in that sense. I've had things that have helped me, certainly. Things that helped me along the process of healing included just letting out the raw rage.
Mm-hmm.
And finding creative ways to do that, including breaking Salvation Army China, talking to the rage, hitting a bot bag, tearing up a newspaper, hitting a pillow. I think our society does not encourage us to deal with rage. It tells you more to take alcohol, take drugs, be in denial, be a workaholic, just don't deal with it. And I found I needed to get through the rage to get to the other side of it. And even to go through the pain to get to the other side of it. If I did not go through the pain, I would not know what intense joy is. And I've experienced real bliss in my life, as well as intense pain.
The Native American culture seemed to have quite an impact on you. How did that assist you?
When I was young, trees were my first friends. If my parents tied me to a tree, I made friends with a tree. And so nature was very, very healing to me. And I talked to trees and hugged trees, and still do. And the Native American culture was the first group of people that other people talked to trees also. I wasn't totally weird.
Mm-hmm.
So the connection with nature was really how I got involved in the Native American culture and have great respect for the Native American beliefs, the traditional beliefs. Obviously, there's a lot of alcoholism that goes on now in the culture. But the traditional beliefs I have a lot of respect for and have been privy to experience wet lodge ceremonies, vision quests, sun dances, and so forth.
You mentioned Bernie Siegel, and as I turned to Bernie's letter to you regarding forgiveness, and this is a man who has just touched the lives of millions and millions of people around the world. And he talks about his grandfather, a great-grandfather, who went through the persecution in Russia, where there were horrible, horrible things that happened. And I'm going to quote from your book, because it said the grandfather, his grandfather and the rabbi might have felt the same way about, you know, that others had seen, but there was this comment, my great-grandfather heard the rabbi say, I wish I were God, because they were above watching the Cossacks raid the village below them. And your grandfather asked, do you want to be God so you can change the bad into good? And the rabbi said, no, I wouldn't change anything. I just want to be God so I can understand. And those were very profound words to me.
They're profound to me also, and I also feel I don't want to be God, but I really have no understanding. The most I can understand is that my parents had very negative self-images, which I know they did, and they looked at me as an extension of them, and by hurting me, they were hurting themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I have no, I mean, that's the most understanding I can get. I can't imagine how anyone can hurt any human being, any animal. I have 7 cats and a dog. I can't even kill a bug. I take it out and put it back into nature. That, to me, it's just not comprehensible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In your afterword, You say of the 6,000 languages spoken in the world today, only a few are universal. The languages of tears, laughter, and love. And these are what we speak this morning. Tears, laughter, and love. They are universal, aren't they?
Right. That was a speech that I gave to my national professional convention after 9/11. And yes, I find tears, laughter, and love to be, you know, universal languages.
Also, you had comments about some of the things you've learned and what are you going to do? You have walked through the valley of tears, of pain, of suffering. You know, laughter, you now are a free person. It doesn't mean that you deny what went on in your life, but you're using it to empower other people, using them, the lessons that of experience, to show others that there are options. You don't have to carry all of this emotional nightmare and baggage. That is not a requirement in life. Nobody says you have to do it. But use it so that you understand and so that you make your life better. What are some of the most profound lessons that you've learned in doing this book about forgiveness?
One of the most profound lessons is that I needed to forgive for my sake, not for my parents. That carrying around anger just ate at me. Elie Wiesel, a Holocaust survivor and Nobel Peace Prize winning author, says, "Hatred devours the hater as well as the hated. Hatred is a cancer. It grows from cell to cell, from limb to limb." And I found the same kind of thing. One of the people who wrote for the book, her daughter was brutally murdered, and she's not only forgiven the murderer, but she has befriended the murderer. But I found the anger was eating at me, and I needed to forgive for my own sake. When Jesus answered Peter's question about how often we should forgive, Jesus replied, "We should forgive 70 times 7. And one of the contributors said, "I know Jesus was not saying to forgive 490 times and then stop, but he was saying that forgiveness is a habit, a way of life."
Mm-hmm. Yes, and forgive and move on.
Right.
Forgive and move on. You ended up writing a letter to your dad.
Correct.
And I found it fascinating that you had like bullet points, and you went right down the line. You were very, very clear about the positive and the negative. What made you decide to do it in that way?
One of the contributors who's dealt with Russell Friedman, he's helped grieving many people go through the grieving process. His book, he sent me a copy of his book, and his book included the idea of the letter and sample letters.
Mm-hmm.
And I followed his formula, basically, on how to write the letter.
Good. And the reason I ask it is because there were times in this letter that you wrote to your dad, which is all in your book, where you felt like you had to apologize for some things, but then you also held him responsible for many other things, which I thought was good. I thought that was absolutely wonderful because you are putting it to paper, and there's some magic. When you take a pen in hand, a pen or pencil, and you start putting your thoughts down on paper, it's like there's a connection with the brain, the heart, and it is a form of release. And at the very end, I really love this. You said, "I'm writing this letter, Dad, to say goodbye to the pain I associate with you and all its manifestations. Dad, I say goodbye to the pain and anger that I associate with you. I release myself of guilt and shame, and I return to you with blessings that which is rightfully yours." I thought that last part of the sentence, "I return to you with blessings that..."
I have compassion for my parents. I hope that in the spirit world they get the love and nurturing that they did not get in this world.
Mm-hmm.
I've never felt revenge, but it took me time to feel compassion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which is understandable after what you went through. That is totally understandable. But I think it's a clarity. And then you said, "Goodbye, Dad," and you released it. And to me, that is so very, very significant. Now, I know that you have a website. Give us that contact information, because I do know that we have people that are listening that are dealing with issues. It could be something with a divorce. It could be the death of a child, a loved one, something that they've watched on television that they get incensed about. It could be something that happened to their family, you know, many generations ago. People are carrying so much of this around. And the perpetuation of hate and anger does not resolve anything. I have yet to see it resolve anything.
I agree with Mahatma Gandhi's point that an eye for an eye makes the whole world blind.
Absolutely.
I mean, there is no future without forgiveness. What kind of future is there?
Forgiveness, and then also the education and the awareness that we have to be present with where we are, with what we do. Because as it is pointed out in the book by some of the people that wrote to you, that they too have seen where someone is brutally abused. Too frequently, they end up becoming an abuser themselves, whether they're male or female. And this is something that probably happened to your parents, and in their distortion, they were passing it on. You, however, have stopped the cycle. You have said, it does not pass on with me. It stops right here. What's your website, Lois?
My website is www.wouldyouforgive.net. Excuse me. The words "Would You Forgive," the subtitle of my book, .net. And it's important to .net. If you put in .com, you will get "For I Have Sinned."
Uh-oh. You don't want that.
I tried to get the .com and ended up finding a very strange website in its place that was already taken. So it's wouldyouforgive.net.
Wouldyouforgive.net. Forgiveness and child abuse. Would you forgive? Now, Lois Einhorn, actually, she's Dr. Lois Einhorn, but her story is one that is worth reading. Instead of closing the eyes to the ugliness that the world sometimes has in it, we need to be able to see what's ugly and what's not, and to understand that we, with our own intention, can make a difference in how we make the world, our world, wherever we might be, a better place to live in. Lois, I want to thank you so much for being my guest, and I want to applaud you and say, keep up your good work. I know you've received all kinds of honors, but I think you've done something here that is, in its own way, its own masterpiece, because of the communication you were able to share, number one, about your own experience and your own resolution to that experience. But two, the fact that you had so many people that cared, that responded to this, and this wonderful book is a result because of that.
Thank you. And do you have a moment that I can share my favorite part of the book?
We have 1 minute, quickly.
Okay. A poem, Religion is Poetry. What if religion consisted of poetry rather than theology? What if metaphors and other images replaced doctrines and dogmas? Would we then realize that we are all God and goddess, priest and priestess, and the divine exists within us, and we exist in the divine?
Lois Einhorn, my guest today. Go to her website, wouldyouforgive.net. Lois, thank you so much for being with me today.
Thank you.
This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't you go away. We've got some good things to share with you. We'll be right back.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
He sees a large open area of valley ground covered with a thick green grass. In the open space are many other children and animals. All kinds of animals. And all of the animals are talking. He can understand every word they are saying.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life, ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling. And the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at Donna@DelphiInternational.com. That's Donna@DelphiInternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.DelphiInternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is Donna@DelphiInternational.com, and her website is www.DelphiInternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Hey, the telephone lines are now open. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. Let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Canadians, you can call in on 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Also, we have a direct line of 530-876-3222. That's 530-876-3222. Now, by the way, for those of you who are listening in the state of Washington, I want to let you know I've been invited to appear in Tacoma, Washington, at a wonderful event. It's the Dickens Fair in the Stadium High District of Tacoma. Now, this has been going on for a few years, and I'm going to be there in costume, where I'm going to be giving many consultations to people at the Tacoma Little Theater. So I will be having that information in my newsletter that will be coming out on the 1st of December, and that's just around the corner. We're going to blink, and we're in the month of December. Hard to believe. But anyway, so I'll be appearing there from noon until 5 o'clock in the evening. So I did want to start giving the information, and I've got more details about this wonderful event that I'll be putting together. But if you need to call me to find out about any specifics, et cetera, then you can call my office at 800-872-8852. That's 800-872-8852. And again, just give me a buzz here at the station if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. And if you're a first-time listener, all I need from you is your first name or your initial. That's it. And then I'm happy to give you whatever I perceive. And then after that, you can ask me a question about whatever you like. So again, the telephone numbers are 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756 or 530-876-3222. I was sent an email by Debbie, and it's the most adorable picture. I'm still getting through my emails. I've got like 300 plus that are waiting for me. It's amazing the volume that I get. But this one just really grabbed my heart, so I wanted to share it with you. I have this beautiful, beautiful photograph of a little girl. She's about 4 years old, and she's giving this big, big hug to this black lab. And you know how sweet those dogs are. Well, it's just absolutely precious. Well, this picture is from a mother who said that her 4-year-old daughter, Meredith, and that's a picture of her daughter here, she said, you know, one of the kindest things I've ever experienced just recently occurred, and I have no way to know who sent it, but there is a beautiful soul working in the dead letter office of the U.S. Postal Service. And this is what she related in this. She said, we had a wonderful dog named Abby, and that's what the picture is, this beautiful black lab. She said, my 4-year-old daughter Meredith was crying and talking about how much she missed Abby. And she said, Mommy, can we write a letter to God so that when Abby gets to heaven, God will, you know, will recognize her? I said, sure, why not? It's a simple request of a child. So Mom sat down and put down the words that her daughter, Abby, not Abby, but Meredith, wanted to say about her dog, Abby. This is the way it read. It said, Dear God, would you please take care of my dog? She died yesterday and is with you in heaven. I miss her very much. I'm happy that you let me have her as my dog, even though she got sick. I hope you'll play with her. She likes to play with balls and to swim. I'm sending a picture of her so when you see her, you'll know that she is my dog. I really miss her. Love, Meredith. Now, her mother said, we put this letter from Meredith in an envelope with a picture of Abby and Meredith and addressed it to God/heaven. We put our return address on it. And then Meredith pasted several stamps on the front of the envelope because she said it would take lots of stamps to get the letter all the way to heaven. And that afternoon, she dropped it into the letterbox at the post office. A few days later, she asked me if God had gotten the letter yet, and I told her I thought he had. Well, wasn't too long after that. Mom went out on the front porch, and she finds a package. Now, this package was all wrapped up in gold paper, and it had, in big letters, to Meredith, and it was handwritten, and her mother didn't recognize it. Well, she took it inside the house, and she said, Meredith, this is for you, and her daughter opened it, and inside the package was a book by Mr. Rogers called When a Pet Dies. Now, they opened up the book, and taped to the inside front cover was the letter that Meredith's mom had written to God for her in its opened envelope. And on the opposite page was the picture of Abby and Meredith, and there was this note. And here's how the note read inside the book. Dear Meredith, Abby arrived safely in heaven. Having the picture was a big help. I recognized Abby right away. And Abby isn't sick anymore. Her spirit is here with me just like it stays in your heart. Abby loved being your dog. Since we don't need our bodies in heaven, I don't have any pockets to keep your picture in. So I'm sending it back to you in this little book for you to keep and have something to remember Abby by. Now, also what was said was thank you for the beautiful letter. And thank your mother for helping you write it and sending it to me. What a wonderful mother you have. I picked her especially for you. I send my blessings every day and remember that I love you very much. By the way, I'm easy to find wherever there is love. Love God. Meredith's mother said this was something that was one of the kindest things she had ever experienced. And I would say that's pretty terrific. And that's a thank you to someone who is sitting in an area that isn't especially bright with light, lots of paper around, the dead letter office. And they took a moment to read a letter from a child and to respond. I think that's pretty special, don't you? Thank you, Debbie, very much for sending that to me. And it's just a terrific story. This is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat at 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756 or 530-876-3222. There are some tidbits of information that I have gotten from Lon, and I thought, wow, this gives me some information I really wouldn't have really thought very much about. And we don't think about these details because we just deal with our stuff every day. We don't think about the bigger picture of how millions of people are involved in doing specific things every day. It's hard for us to conceptualize that. Well, here are some of the tidbits that Lon sent along, and I thought these are pretty good to share. Most bottles and jars contain 25% recycled glass. Times have changed. If you lined up all the polystyrene foam cups made in just one day, they'd circle the earth. Every year we dispose of 24 million tons of leaves and grass clippings, which, if they're not, could be composted to conserve landfill space. And when you recycle 1 ton of paper, you save 17 trees, 6,953 gallons of water, 463 gallons of oil, 587 pounds of air pollution, 3.06 cubic yards of landfill space, and 4,077 kilowatt hours of energy. And if that isn't awesome enough, newspapers, just in today, 62 million newspapers will be printed in the U.S. and 44 million will be thrown away. That means the equivalent of about 500,000 trees will be dumped into landfills. And packaging from consumer goods comprises about one-third of the nation's trash and approximately 50% of the nation's paper, 80% of its steel, 75% of its glass, 40% of its aluminum, and 30% of its plastic are used solely for packaging. Amazing bits of information. But I'll tell you what. When you hear about that, there are people that are working every day to try to make changes. And I watched a program just the other night about corn. And do you know that they now have what we would perceive as plastic packaging that is totally biodegradable, made from corn? It's all in how you understand how to do things. And that is the point. It is good to be aware of these stats and these details because when we pollute our environment, when we poison everything that's around us, we're the ones that are going to get poisoned too. So finally, we're becoming aware enough to do something about it. And it takes a willingness to step out of the box of conventional thinking. And when I learned about this with corn, I thought, this is incredible. I never in a million years would have thought that plastic materials could have been made from corn. But it's all in what you understand, and that's why it's so important that our children, we encourage them to love math, science, the arts, encourage them to imagine something different. This is a world that is absolutely marvelous to be a part of, especially when we know we are contributing in one way or another to making it a better place. So if you've got an idea for doing something better, share it. Bring it out. There's plenty of space. There's plenty of opportunity. And we can make a difference. If we just share information, you never know what you're going to say. Maybe we'll trigger a concept or an idea for someone that will make a change in their life. It's very important to realize you're living now. Do the best with what you have at this time and be open and willing to grow and expand. Oh, my goodness, what a difference it'll make in your life. You'll never get bored, and you'll find that there are solutions. And you know what happens when you do that? You will discover that there will be so many wonderful people that will want to know you because they'll say, I've been thinking along those same lines myself. I'm so glad to have the opportunity to meet you. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break. Don't go away. We're going to be back in just a moment with some more good things.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Gedros. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. I wanted to just share something with you. If you're like me and you're not a sophisticate when it comes to dealing with technology, oh boy, that is not my area of expertise. The one thing I've learned to do is to ask questions. And what is so nice, I am discovering there are people that is their passion and they just absolutely love dealing with it. And there is a process in learning. There's always that learning curve. Whenever you're going into a new environment of experience where you feel sort of cautious and fearful and you go, gee whiz, I wonder if I should really do this. I wonder if I'm ever going to be able to do it or whatever else. You may think, ah, this just isn't my thing, which is what I say when it comes to technology. But actually, I am finding that when I toss out certain ideas or concepts, and you just don't be afraid, don't be embarrassed about asking for things, people just get so excited about being able to share with you their expertise. They just love to do that. And that is something that is really, really good to remember. Don't feel like you're in this world alone. You're not. You know, you depend on so many people, whether you want to admit it or not. You are dependent on literally hundreds of thousands of people so that you can live the life of independence and individuality that you want. We're all interconnected. And so when you can ask questions, when you can acknowledge that you don't have certain strengths, when you're willing to learn and you're willing to be open, your world is going to just absolutely transform. Now, I was sent something by Bob, and it is it's a parable, really, and I really liked it because he said, these are gifts from the heart. And this is a legend that Bob was sharing. He said, there was a young man while he was roaming the desert. He came across a spring of delicious, crystal clear water. The water was so sweet that he filled his leather canteen so he could bring some back to a tribal elder who had been his teacher. Now, it took him 4 days to get back to the elder from where he was, and when he arrived, he presented the water to the old man, who took a deep drink, smiled warmly, and thanked his student lavishly for the sweet water. While the young man went back to his village, and he was just so thrilled because this is what he had wanted to give this gift to the elder. Now, later on, this young man, who was a teacher, let another student taste the water. The student spit it out, saying it was terrible. Now, having been in this old leather container for a period of time, the water had become stale and had absorbed some of the taste of the leather. The student challenged his teacher and said, oh, master, this water was foul. Why in the world did you pretend to like it? And the teacher replied, you only tasted the water, I tasted the gift. The water was simply the container for an act of loving kindness, and nothing could be sweeter. Heartfelt gifts deserve the return gift of gratitude. And I think that is something we can all learn from. We need to be aware that there are times when we are given gifts in life that may be sort of bitter in the way that they're given, not unlike the experiences which were horrific to Lois, who was my guest earlier. There comes that moment when we need to appreciate the gift. Sometimes it can be utterly magnificent. Sometimes we may think it's utterly ugly. But there is often something within the gift of experience, within the gifts that life brings us, good, bad, or indifferent, that we can grow from. And when we can learn to be aware that there is the gift, we're really going to be able to grow as human beings. Donna Sebo, 877-876-5227. If you'd like to give me a call, let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, or 888-815-9756. 530-876-3222. How would you like to know about your winter horoscope? Well, I'll tell you what. I've got some information in front of me here, and what I'll do, three signs, Aries, Taurus, and Gemini, And then in the next few days, we'll cover the rest of the signs of the zodiac. So let's see what's going to be available for those of you this winter. Well, you know what? If you're under the sign of Aries and you are a single person, I think the holidays are going to be really good for you. And apparently those of you under the sign of Aries are not going to be too concerned about diet because you're going to take good care of yourself this season. You're not going to pig out at all the buffet tables. You're going to say, I'm going to be good to me, and you're going to be feeling good. Now, in January, those of you with Aries, you may end up landing a dream job. So don't give up on your aspirations. It's a great time for career. It's a great time to update your skills, start a new hobby, go for what you really want to go for those of you under the sign of Aries. And then the month of February for you also, you're going to have an opportunity to become a part of something bigger than yourself, perhaps a special group. And your work life, right with your career, is going to improve dramatically, especially towards the end of the month. And you're going to find people who are very supportive of you. So just know you've got special things evolving and your hard work will pay off. How about those of you under the sign of Taurus? Well, this December, you're going to start seeing better signs of financial independence and peace of mind regarding money. You'll have a chance to travel over the holiday season, but I think really what's occurring is you're getting your life straightened up and straightened out in a very special way. When it comes into the month of January, you're going to be getting yourself organized. You're also going to be focusing on money. How can you make it work more effectively for you? You're going to want to leverage your money so that it brings you better abundance. And also, I think you're going to find that there's something about the family that you're going to learn that's going to mean a lot to you. Under the sign of Taurus, the month of February, you may really find yourself wanting to get recognition at work, and that may well happen. Also, if you have a family, you're going to find that the family is going to be the focus of your attention during the month of February. The third sign for the day is Gemini, and if it's in December, well, Geminis, you may find yourself really pleased as you can be with relationships with people, and you may find out also that there's going to be an unexpected windfall for you during the month of December, and if you're out looking for a job, I think you've got a real good chance of finding it. And in January, you're going to be busy, 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 busy. You need to stay flexible, though, because you're going to find that there may be some changes in your plans evolving during the month of January. So be prepared. Don't think you've got to lock yourself in. Be adaptable. Be flexible. Then in February, you are going to find that you have just such a good feeling about yourself. You are really going to be giving you, yourself, the individual attention, the individual attention that you really should give to yourself, looking at ways that maybe you can make your life better, maybe you learn how to dress differently. There's something about you. It's all about you during the month of February. Well, those are the three signs that I've got for you today, and then I'll be sharing the other nine signs of the zodiac as we go along, and we are out of time. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. And if you need to know about forgiveness, you can do it. Remember, when you forgive, you don't necessarily have to forget, but forgiveness frees you from being bound to what it is you don't want. Free yourself so you can have and be what you do want. Donna Sebo here. Talk with you tomorrow, and it's going to be a good one. We're going to be talking about baseball. Branch Rickey, Baseball's Ferocious Gentlemen. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.